With that, Dick?
Good morning. Yeah, I would like to have a short statement. Dave, I appreciate the fact that many of you have asked to have an opportunity to ask me questions about the launch and the loss of foam from the PAL ramp of the Discovery external tank. And I'm glad we got this opportunity to do it. I will tell you that I have been following the events of the mission through what I read in the press. So what y'all are writing is a source of much of my information, plus whatever I can glean out of a few NASA contacts that I have. But in large, you guys have as much information about what has transpired and what's happening as I do. So I'm not going to try to add any additional information there. However, I do think it's important for you to know that early in our return to flight efforts, in our fact finding, NASA identified that the PAL ramps were a potential source of large debris. They early on identified that. And we, during the course of our subsequent fact finding, followed the agency through the extensive process that they went through of analyzing the causes of foam loss, studying the flight histories that they had, and looking at the non-destructive inspection techniques they could use to eventually develop rationale that said that changes to the PAL ramps were not required in order to eliminate critical debris. Now, we accepted that rationale. And so when we talked in our report about the fact that critical debris itself has not been eliminated, and we would expect debris to be liberated from the external tank, that led to me not being surprised that foam would come off the external tank. We fully expected that foam would, and then until you got into a flight test environment, since you can't put the tank into a wind tunnel and test it, that you really wouldn't understand the true effect of all the changes that you had made. That being said, I am surprised, and as are other members of the task group, that foam from the PAL ramp separated during this launch. We were surprised at both the fact that it was PAL ramp foam and the size of it. So with that, I think we might as well go on to questions from there.
Okay. Why don't we begin just down the row here with Irene?
Thanks. Irene Klotz with Reuters. I'd like to know how confident you feel that a second test flight would be able to exonerate this tank, and if you think that a third flight might be necessary if there's additional problems if and when NASA flies again.
Well, the agency had committed to the first two missions having some special restrictions on them to accommodate the flight test nature. Every flight's going to be a test flight of some type, and I would leave it up to the NASA folks to determine what type of restrictions and limitations they would put on flights beyond the next one, if they would have any special considerations there.
John Schwartz from the New York Times. It seemed that y'all were set to actually say that NASA had, your working group said NASA had accomplished the goal of reducing foam to acceptable levels, and then you turned it around at the final meeting. Could you talk about that moment and what it would have meant if you had given the thumbs up on this?
Well, I will tell you that loss of foam from the PAL area was not part of the consideration specifically for us saying that the intent of the CAVE recommendation had not been achieved, which was to eliminate all debris. We didn't feel that that it had been demonstrated that the debris that was expected or could be expected was less than what the orbiter could potentially stand, that gap had not been closed. But quite honestly, we were talking in terms of small debris and small damage and did not consider the potential for the PAL ramp separation that we saw.
Frank Mooring with Aviation Week. Having both the genius of hindsight and also having walked through the analysis with NASA, at this point, Can you see any areas where they might have gone down the wrong path that they may want to pursue now?
Well, I think that they clearly are going to have to go back and one more time look at the phenomena of foam separation and the physics involved in foam separation, and go through their assumptions and their conclusions relative to that. The idea that voids were primarily the cause of separation, that you can see these voids in non-destructive inspection, has all been challenged by what happened on the launch.
John Johnson, Los Angeles Times. Well, you said that you were surprised by the amount of foam that came off. I guess I'm just curious as to what you would say now, as having been on this this investigative team. Should they come back to you again now? Should you be involved more before they go fly again? I mean, where are we as far as you're concerned?
Well, first off, we're not an investigative team and never were. We basically were chartered to do an assessment of the actions taken. We looked at the actions taken. We found those we believe that the actions taken relative to the changes made to the tank were appropriate for a return to flight. Now, we also said that we didn't feel that they had met the full intent of the CABE recommendation, which was to eliminate all debris, because that just wasn't going to be possible. Again, we're not investigators, so I don't see us getting called back in to do anything. We pretty much have finished our work, which was to look at what had been done in preparation for this first flight and give our assessment of it. Our assessment was that although they hadn't met the full intent of the CABE recommendation, they had done those things that we thought were appropriate to be able to return to flight.
Well, I apologize then for the use of the term investigative team, and I know that's not correct. But I guess, you have been intimately involved in this. I'm just curious as to, are you in any sense alarmed at the fact that this happens, after 2 years of work?
Well, I think I'm surprised, because it was an area that, in our fact-finding and understanding the rationale that the agency had gone through, and looking at what they felt they needed to do before they flew this flight, that we concurred in that. That we felt that they had appropriate rationale for flying the PAL ramps as they flew. And the benefit of all of the data collection that now is part of the system and the framing of a test flight means that we have a whole lot of information now that can be used in going and resolving this particular problem. It wasn't the area that we thought that there would be a potential for foam loss. We were wrong.
Beth? Beth Dickey with Government Executive. I want to get at the rationale part of that for just a minute. In hindsight, given that you all, in your fact findings, followed the way NASA developed its rationale for the PAL ramp, can you look at that now and say that you see anything wrong with the way the rationale was developed, given all of the emphasis that NASA's been putting on new safety culture and the way it looks at things and talks about things and debates them?
I'm unaware of anyone who thought that there was a fundamental problem with the rationale.
Jim?
Thank you for taking the time. This is Jim Over. Would you think out loud with us for a little bit and imagine the kinds of steps, because you've seen all these steps take place already, the kinds of steps one would have to do now to re-verify foam separation from theory and from the phenomenon and the physics, how long you think that would take or should take, and then the steps that would be taken to test, to develop, fabricate, validate, and deliver a flight-qualified external tank. In other words, speculate, and it's purely speculation, on the duration of the steps.
I'm sorry, Jim, I'm not going to speculate, because I don't have the background to go through and the understanding of what really has happened yet to go and put that in perspective and say this is what it's going to take.
Well, okay, thank you.
Dick, it's Bill Hardwood with CBS News. You raised a point earlier that I was thinking about myself, which is the issue of the non-destructive evaluation and the theory about what causes foam loss in the first place. If you're suggesting, and you're not putting words in your mouth, but just thinking about that, if that theory or that thinking about what causes it in the first place is not valid, or if this invalidates that, doesn't that raise some questions about, I mean, the rest of the tank in terms of what causes foam liberation anywhere?
Well, I would look at it from the standpoint of maybe there's some additional phenomena in physics that are involved that don't explain completely all foam loss, okay, that go beyond what we currently believe causes foam loss. And so it's additive to the body of knowledge, if you would, relative to foam loss. And I think the basic premise that elimination of voids, being able to verify that you're flying without voids, pretty much proved itself in most of the areas where changes were made for this tank. I haven't seen all the data, but my understanding of preliminary information is that if you look at the loss of foam, it's more than what we would like to see. But it may be substantially less than what we've seen in the past. And you guys can get that information from NASA. But if that's the case, it means that we understand at least part of the phenomena. It's just, is there some additional phenomena that we had not made the right judgments about that now have to be gone back and looked at again?
Yeah, just a quick follow-up. When you guys were following the rationale for leaving the power ramps the way they were, do you recall any discussion of just in general terms about, you know, the risk associated with stuff that is hand applied and the techniques that are used for that? I mean, do you think that would you think there's at least a door open that the human element is a factor in something like this and just the mechanics of how it's put on? Clear, but I mean, if you can get the gist of what I'm saying.
Well, this is a manually applied area of foam. We've always known that there's greater risk in those types of areas, much like the bipod ramp, and so the variability that you can get with manual application of foam will continue to be a concern. The areas of new foam, manual foam application, have a much more controlled process for how that is done than what it was done in the past. So there's ability to make improvements there in areas where we haven't applied the new control processes for manual foam application.
Before we proceed, I forgot one thing at the beginning. For those on the loop, if you would mute your handsets or phones, and if you don't have a mute button, you can use *6 to mute and then *6 to unmute. Okay, thank you. I think we're set now. Guy?
Hi. Dick Guigui out of the Washington Post. I think in one of your task force briefings, either very early this year or late last year, maybe not you personally, but members of the task force reflected on the possibility that that NASA was relying too much on simulations and perhaps because they had no other choice, or perhaps because they were too reliant on computers. Do you think that, in light of what happened on Tuesday, that they should perhaps go back to the drawing board as far as their simulations and computer work? Should they take the data that they have from this flight and use that exclusively? What kinds of changes might they make in their test protocol?
Well, I think they need to continue to refine both the models and simulations that they use, and refine the ways in which they use them. This particular phenomena, I don't believe, is tied directly back to the use of models and simulations, which were primarily focused on, debris environment and transport analysis. So No, I would encourage them to continue to develop and refine their models. They're going to be valuable to them, not only in determining their way through this particular situation, but for operational use in the future, potentially.
Dick Covey, this is Todd Halverson of Florida Today. I was wondering whether you thought this foam loss, and particularly the size of it, points up the need to retire the space shuttle fleet, and whether you think that should be accelerated.
I don't think this particular loss of foam incident changes my opinion that the shuttle can be flown appropriately for the next 5 years.
Okay, and then just a quick follow. I've always kind of been curious about why you guys thought that NASA did not meet this particular CABE recommendation on the liberation of foam, because I think the wording of that recommendation calls for NASA to initiate an aggressive program to eliminate debris, and it's clear to me that they initiated a program and that it was fairly aggressive. I'm wondering, was there discord on your board on this matter, or why you guys thought they didn't initiate an aggressive program?
That we felt they did initiate an aggressive program. The key thing to us was the all debris. They do not have a program that will lead them to the point where all debris will be eliminated in the remaining lifetime of the shuttle program. So we knew that. So that was a way of looking at the words. As you may remember, the technical panel's recommendation was that they believe the intent of the CABE recommendation had been met, that an aggressive program had been initiated, that appropriate things had been done. But the task group in general felt that with a more strict interpretation of the all debris and the fact that there wasn't a program that would lead to all debris being eliminated from the external tank, that the intent hadn't been met.
Marcia.
This is Marcia Dunn of the Associated Press. For the past couple of days, every NASA manager who's come out has said that they were wrong about their rationale and that they'd made a mistake. And so my question for you is, do you believe now that the task force made a mistake, that you were wrong in accepting and buying off on the rationale regarding the PEL ramp?
Well, I can go back and look at it a couple of ways. Clearly, the rationale that we accepted was wrong, and the flight test demonstrated that. So, were we wrong in accepting that rationale? I guess yes, we probably were. But we certainly weren't any smarter at that point than the folks that were working it on the NASA side.
Are you taking questions from the phones now, or is this all in the room?
No, we're still in the room. We'll get to you, I promise.
I couldn't quite tell.
Okay. Okay, Mark.
Hi, this is Mark Caro from the Houston Chronicle. I'm going to build on an earlier question and then ask you something based on that. Do you think this is kind of a design generic problem more than a sort of specific site problem? If so, one of the things that the task force also took issue with the NASA effort was on repair and inspection, and especially the repair. What does that mean now, after we've seen this, about the kind of effort that may need to be made to have a better repair technique before they fly again?
Well, I would go back to the basic rationale that was used for return to flight, which is that the elimination of debris potential from the tank had been was at a point where it was safe to return to flight. I think that's got to be the criteria again. Now we know more now. We know that the flight history that showed 100 flights where we didn't have any documented loss of foam from the PAL ramps after STS-7. 100 flights, that use of that history and use of the assumptions relative to the physics of foam separation need to be looked at again. and that was inappropriate based upon what happened. But we didn't know that till it happened. No one was smart enough to know that until we saw the problem on this launch.
But what do you think about, I mean, the whole repair thing is so integrally tied into this. Is that something else that NASA should look at and try to come up with something better than they have before they fly again, or not? Does this change that, I guess is what I'm saying?
I don't think so. I think they got to make sure that they're not going to shed dangerous foam from the tank. And they're going to continue to work the repair, and they'll do that. And next time they fly, they'll have more capability than they do now, and they may even have eventually some certified capability. But that's an ongoing effort. That's one they're continuing to work. Best as we know, when we finished our fact finding in June, and that was their intent. So I would expect they're going to continue to do that.
Okay, I know we have a couple of folks here in the room, but I'm going to go to the phone now, and then we'll come back here and finish up. But I guess we'll begin with Andy.
Hi, thanks again. Andy Revkin, New York Times. I guess this is a bit building on what Guy was asking before. One of the members of the peer review panel, the separate one that looked at this whole foam question, was pretty critical of the lack of physical testing. And this gets at the question of, with foam particularly, all the wind tunnel tests and stuff that have been done since 1983 were done on shapes, not on structures or actual materials. And was that ever something that came up as a concern for your group?
Well, I think we were, you know, everybody, including the on the NASA side, everybody wished that there were additional ways we could do physical testing. And the limitations of that meant that you had to go down a path sometimes of using best engineering judgment in order to move on and to proceed. So I believe everybody would like to have seen the ability to do additional physical testing that we couldn't do because of the fact that you can't necessarily put, in particular wind tunnel testing, you can't do that with the external tank.
The whole thing?
Yeah.
But why not a component, you know, some particular feature where you could have air at the appropriate density flowing over surface and see what happens to the foam?
Yeah, we never addressed the specific issues of additional types of testing that might be done.
Okay.
That weren't.
Deborah, are you with us?
I am with you. I'm going to pass this around. Thank you.
Okay. Ralph, are you with us?
Hi, Dave.
Yeah,
I just had to get my mute off there.
Okay.
I was fumbling around. Thanks for recognizing me. This is Ralph Artabedian from the LA Times. Can I ask about this rationale that the foam, that you couldn't meet the recommendation that all foam debris be lost, be eliminated? Because it seems very early in the investigation process, NASA officials were saying, we won't accept any recommendation that calls for the elimination of all foam. And I just wonder where that idea came from and how seriously NASA really tried to challenge the idea that they could have done it if they had made the effort.
Well, I'm unaware of anybody that said that they would challenge any recommendation, but,
I think Marcia wrote a story from, quoted Neil Ott saying that by June of 2003.
Yeah, okay, well, I probably don't remember reading things that long ago. I believe that NASA looked appropriately at what could be done with this design of tank, with this design of tank. If you're going to apply thermal protection to the outside of the tank, and you have to do it in this type of system, which is the design of the system, that it is not realistic to believe that you could eliminate all debris, all foam debris. That acknowledgement early on meant that the focus was on elimination of critical debris, and then eventually got to the point of trying to define what, you know, critical debris was and really understanding that. So all of the effort that went into the external tank was focused on those areas where the rationale said critical debris could be liberated from, and what can we do to eliminate it in those areas? And we felt, the task group felt, that those appropriate things had been done to the tank to address that. Now, after the tank was constructed, and this was part of our issue, was the definition or the amount of debris that could be determined to be critical was less than what the tank was actually built to. Therefore, we felt that there was always a possibility that you could liberate critical debris from the tank, even with the modifications that were made, largely due to the fact that the size of critical debris came down substantially after the tank was built. Anybody still there?
Can you hear us?
Sorry about that. Okay.
Go ahead. Can you hear me? It's Kathy Thomas from Time Magazine. My question has to do with, given what's happened this week, what does that tell you about the changes in NASA culture, and how does that, you know, bode well or ill for the future of the Moon to Mars project?
Well, you know, culture changes over time, and I think there are some attributes of the NASA culture which have always been exceptional. I've seen some of that come out in this time frame. I think the early recognition of the impact of what was seen during launch, I believe the aggressive involvement of the administrator in understanding and representing the position, not only of the agency, but the technical positions in many ways relative to the loss of foam, I think are all very powerful.
And what's the second part of the question about what do you think this is going to, how is it going to affect the Moon to Mars, you know, the political will to go ahead with that?
Flying
maybe
in
just
space,
as an interested party.
Yeah, flying in space is a tough business. It's complicated. It will always be risky. And it takes leaders who are willing to acknowledge the limitations of the systems that they have and go off and advance them. So, you know, if you're looking from the standpoint of, okay, we've got some problems we got to go solve before we fly the next flight, I don't think those are insurmountable. When they're ready, we'll go fly and we'll finish. And I think it still sets a good path for our exploration program.
Okay, let's see. I want to check and see if the folks we missed, if we had any questions. Doesn't look like it. I got time for two more questions. Mark?
This is Mark Corot from Houston Chronicle again. When Mike Griffin met with us this morning, he was hopeful that this issue could be fixed quickly. He didn't want to concede that it would take a long time, especially another 2.5 years. Does that ring with you, too? Does that resonate with you? Or do you think this has to be a long time grounding for the shuttle?
I really don't know. My gut feel is that this is something that can be addressed comparatively quickly to the last 2.5 years.
And the last one will go to Marcia.
Marcia Dunn, AP again. Dick, before, you know, after the recommendation, your findings came out, you said that you would have been comfortable to fly on this flight. And I'm just wondering, in light of what happened, is spaceflight even riskier than you ever even thought? And is NASA even perhaps less attentive to detail than you would have ever envisioned in light of what's happened and in light of the fact that you said before that you would have been fine flying on this flight?
You know, with where we were and what we knew, I still, you know, I would still say, hey, at the time I was ready to go fly. That doesn't change. It is a test flight. Fortunately, we had all of the ways of collecting the data that we needed to understand what happened. And then the other, you know, fortunate part is that this mission's going fine. All the other things that have been done to help us understand the integrity of the Discovery's thermal protection system are working as planned. It looks like it's going to be a great mission. And then there is this residual issue that has to go be resolved before we fly again, and that's okay. That's what you do when you do test flights. You learn, and then you go fix, and then you fly again.
Okay. I think that's all we have time for. Thank you very much. Appreciate it, Dick.
Sure.